The only problem here is no one's going to be able to see your face to understand your name.
That's all right. I'm sure they can close their eyes and imagine it. Don't you think?
I think so. Derek, do you know Bo's nickname here?
Well, I know it's Bo. I'm not sure what it means.
Do you know why it's Bo?
No.
Just look at his face for a while and tell him if you can figure it out. Just talk.
It's, but it's untrue.
It's Bo Jackson.
No.
It's not Bo Jackson.
No. He has the man moves zero facial muscles when he talks and laughs. It's like he has permanent Botox all over. So he's, I call
true.
Him Bo because he's Botox.
This is true. It's true. I hope you're recording this part.
Are you? You
did record. Yeah, totally.
Laughing here because I got a good friend in the studio. Guy has been in my life. I've been in his life for years now. Welcome to The Aggressive Life. A recent Pew Research poll found that Americans are becoming increasingly cautious about the role of AI in our culture and everyday lives. Today, we're going to solve the problem because my buddy Bo has got it figured out. In 2022, 38% of respondents were more concerned than excited about the potential of AI in daily life. And last year, that number jumped to 52%, and only 10% of the population list themselves as more excited than concerned. What is this? OpenAI, ChatGPT, machine learning, elimination of humans to not only do physical work, we're doing that while having factories and all the car plants, but now humans can be eliminated to do mental work, and now we're losing out on artists, because who needs an artist? You could just go and Google, well, once Google gets up to snuff with Gemini or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you have the video you want and the photo, oh, the world is crashing, the world is horrible, oh no, is it or is it not? My buddy Bo, given name, Chad Reynolds, is a visionary and entrepreneur. He's the founder and CEO of Vervay, a Cincinnati-based artificial intelligence company that builds people-powered AI systems. Now, I know some of you think, oh, Cincinnati. Brian, you just live in Cincinnati, and so you just keep people from Cincinnati, but these aren't people who, like, really are okay, like, Bo was I'm sorry. I got to call you Bo the whole time. I'm not going to start calling you Chad.
We can sub it out.
We're not going to sub it out. Bo was just invited out to Google with how many people were there?
Well, I did a roundtable with the CEO of Google Cloud, so just a handful.
Handful, right. Yeah. Around a round table. This wasn't a nice thing. It was around a round table, like 10, 12 people, whatever like that. And they identified you as contributing something and being a leader and pioneer in the AI space and helping format their plan and what we do.
Yeah.
So kind of a big deal.
I never speak like that. But yeah, I mean, we're working on some really interesting approaches to AI, but mostly AI that's powered by people. I think it's fundamentally different than some of the other AI players out there. But I'm curious, before we jump in, how do you, I guess in that Pew research, where would you find yourself in those choices of, are you extremely excited about what's happening? Are you on the other end of the spectrum?
I'm extremely excited, but I think I'm rare, you know, because I can't see how my job is negatively affected by AI. I only see how my job can be helped and accentuated. And I think, you know, a lot of people who aren't at the top of an organization, I think it's a different deal. And that's just in the job front, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you and I have been friends for a long, long time. You were one of the brainchilds with Ocean, who you and I have poured some sweat, blood, and tears into, which is a nonprofit that develops entrepreneurs, serves entrepreneurs. You and I have been in a men's group for now how long?
Almost 12 years.
Oh my gosh, it's been 12 years?
Yeah. I've seen you almost every Thursday for 12 years.
Sheesh.
That's a lot. That's a lot of BT.
12 years.
A lot of omelets. A lot of lumberjacks at the Echo. But
Lumberjacks.
If anybody orders that when they go there.
Yeah, it's a Cincinnati staple. Lumberjack is amazing. When our buddy EQ goes in, Andrew Salisbury, and he sissifies it, so it becomes the seamstress.
You can't do it egg whites.
It becomes the seamstress. No, sorry. You can't go in and have it with egg whites and have granola flakes instead of the sausage gravy. No, you're a seamstress. You're not a lumberjack.
Yeah. And now he knows.
Yes. All right. So let's go back to the very beginning. He knows and everybody else knows. Let's go back to the beginning. Here's one of my goals for today. I want people to understand AI because I think a lot of people don't understand it. We're not able to separate it from machine learning. We're not able to separate it from, bots.
Right.
We're mouthing words, but I don't think a lot of us understand. So I want to help people understand what it means. And then I want to help people understand if it can be leveraged, how do I leverage it? But before we do all that, let's go back to your early formation story. Tell us about Bo.
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up in Cincinnati, went to DAP, a design school here locally. Was fascinated by design research and storytelling and was still am a lifelong entrepreneur. So I just love the idea of finding problems to solve. And then I think my mom just locked me in a room full of Lego bricks and Lincoln logs back in the day. But I just love solving problems. And there's no problem big enough for me to go tackle. So I just love when there's opportunities to go use my creativity and determination and different thinking styles to solve those problems. And so I started Vervé, which I love your French pronunciation of it. Vervé.
Did I say it wrong?
No, it's fine.
What was it supposed to be?
Vervé. It's all good.
That's the same thing. Wait. What did I say and what is it?
I think it was like Vervé. That's where you're going.
And it's what?
Vervé. All one word. But
do you hear the difference there, Derek?
I think it's just where the stress is.
Yeah.
Vervé.
Vervé.
So it shouldn't be Vervé.
No. It was good. It was good.
All right, okay. I don't understand the difference between those two, but keep going anyway. Good.
So when I started Vervé about 4 years ago, I wanted to solve a problem around getting as many people in a room to contribute into a solution. And, I spent the last 20-something years doing focus groups, workshops for, everybody from like Adidas, Unilever, all their brands, Vans, Timberland, like a bunch of different brands. I would spend all my time on the road running these creative workshops to help, kind of translate consumer insights into new product ideas. So over those years, you've come in contact. You would have a room of maybe 6 to 8 people. You can get in the room and, from leading a bunch of these things, there's a tendency for people to get lost in the conversation. Mm-hmm. So usually a few people were driving everything. And so I got frustrated with it and just said, there has to be a better way to collaborate and get more voices in the room. And at the time, more voices equaled more human effort to go do these things. So I needed to come up with a solution to get as many people in the room without them necessarily needing to be there. And so I created Vervé, which was short for a video survey. So something you could launch out to thousands of people, collect all their voices, but still have the humanity in hearing how people talk about and express insights in their life.
Why say go back to the beginning? You're going back to 6 years ago. You're not going back to the beginning.
Yeah, beginning was the day I graduated college. How far back you want to go?
That sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, the day I graduated college, I started my first company. So I had a partner at the time who believed in what I wanted to do, which was around digital storytelling. So this was in like 1999, 2000, kind of the dawn of the internet as we know it. And there was just tremendous opportunity to create stories and experiences online. And I just fell in love with that space and technology and how you could, anybody in the world could go to a URL and see something that you made, which up until then, wasn't necessarily possible. And so I wanted to use technology in a really interesting way to tell stories. Up till then, it was primarily, if you remember, internet sites from back in the day. It was just a series of text and buttons and banners and big images. It wasn't really interactive. And so I started out building movie websites with Warner Brothers. for a lot of their films. Yeah. So all different kinds of films from like a HarryPotter.com through Beer Fest. So
I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they would send me a script of a movie and then we'd have about 5 days to take the script from the movie and kind of turn it into how we might market it digitally. So, you know, do the website for like Lady in the Water or I was like M. Night Shyamalan.
Love that movie, Lady in the Water. You did that movie?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was really funny because M. Night Shyamalan, who was the director, was kind of known, like after Sixth Sense, was kind of known for his, you know, surprise endings. And then his, you know, kind of the few movies after that kind of bombed. And so he attributed it to that someone was leaking the end. Wow. And so when you're trying to do marketing for a film, he would send not the entire script. He would send 3 sentences on a piece of paper and a CD-ROM of like 3 or 4 images. And that was it.
Jeez.
And so we didn't have much to work on to create any of the marketing around it. But yeah, that was kind of my day in the life for 8 years. Was working on movies, working on brands, but applying this kind of story architecture to how you might reinvent brands. Kind of fast forward, ended up selling my shares in the company, and then went on and just became fascinated with this idea of co-creation. So how do I create innovation that doesn't require me to be in the room? Like I don't have to be there. I don't have to be the smartest person. What if you can just open it up and allow other people to contribute all their insights, all their ideas into a shared space and what could come from that? Mm. And it was just a different way to think back then. And so I started a series of different companies in that same vein, which were all around creative problem solving.
So you are one of those serial entrepreneurs.
I definitely am.
But also one of those serial entrepreneurs who's actually made money.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of people talk about being a serial entrepreneur and
fail 8 times.
And they go, like, okay, if you're followed anything through to the end, I mean, way to be aggressive in starting something, but there's also going to be a level of aggression in finishing something and completing something.
Yeah.
You know, 1 foot in front of the other, hitting the nail every day.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of discipline to do it. But yeah, I mean, every company I've started, I think I closed down one, but all the others have been exited.
Yeah. Exited meaning like acquired. You sold. Right. Got money, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So Verve, when started 4 years ago, was, I never really start anything with the intention to sell it. You just start something where you fall in love with the problem so much so as you become obsessed with it and you can't stop thinking about it. Hmm. And so whenever I find myself opening up like a new note, you know, on my phone and that thread just goes longer and longer and longer and I'm just contributing all my thoughts and ideas in this thing, at a certain point you get to and you're like, okay, I should probably make something. And so that's where Verve came from was, well, how do I solve this problem in a unique and novel way? In a way that no one has done before. Hmm. And so
I like that.
Started out sketching and then just share your ideas. I mean, I think a lot of people just hold their ideas to themselves.
Yeah.
And I've always found that the quickest you can share an idea with someone, regardless if they add anything, add any value to it, it's a seminal moment for you as a person to have now your first collaborator. And then you just keep growing and growing and growing and build a small little community around the idea, and then it becomes, then a product can take shape from all those voices.
So how did you evolve into being an AI guru? I mean, you are that. I mean, in the world, if you say, okay, top people who are, you're in that conversation. You're one of those guys, even though you're not in the news with OpenAI and Sam, whatever his face is and all those guys. I mean, you're a leader in this. So how does that happen?
Yeah, it happened by accident. Just by being obsessed with the problem. Hmm. So probably 6-7 years ago, I started recording all of our focus groups, or I'd send consumers out on missions all over the world using their phone to capture a part of their life, right? So it might be, you know, hey, Brian, go to your closet, share, you know, your favorite pair of running shoes, and on camera, like, break down why you like them, what specifically, what are the pain points, frustrations, all those kinds of things. And that you scale that out to maybe 2,000 Brians out there who are sharing.
When you're with Adidas or Nike?
We did both. We're going with both.
Are you both those guys right now, or that was?
Right now we're working with Adidas, but probably like 10 different footwear companies. So we would get, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of videos coming through, and you know, then the problem was like, well, I can't watch everything. And so I approached a professor at UC who was, you know, working in and teaching machine learning. And so he took a meeting, just, you know, this is how all these things start, is like you just start a conversation with someone. You're like, hey, I am curious about how I could take all of this information I'm getting and create a system that could do sense making. So just like a human being, I'm seeing what's happening in the video. I can spot different insights and trends and cues, but how can I train a system, a computer system, to do that for me? I didn't want to, you know, replace myself, but I wanted to replace a part of, you know, the analysis of all that data and see if there are things that I'm missing. And so we started to build a prototype of what that was. It took about a year to do it, but.
So what's that look like? A prototype that you build it? That means you got pencil neck geeks staring at computers and typing code. And what does that mean?
No. So we had to.
Which you're not a pencil neck geek and you're in this. So I guess that's an old metaphor that doesn't work anymore.
No. I don't
even know if there is such a thing as pencil neck geeks anymore. They were back in my day.
Yeah. Now they're all the cool kids.
Yeah, they are. So, right. Keep going.
Yeah. So it's just a really, I don't know, simple way to break down the process of how you, like, how do you analyze information and then try to train a computer to do that for me. So when you kind of look at the definition of AI, it's really simply just trying to train a computer to think and do tasks like a human would. Now there's, it's making that jump from a whiteboard into code is, you know, was quite a leap, you know, maybe six years ago.
Right.
But it's not anymore.
It's not.
No. So, I mean, with the advent of, you know, more generative AI, so are you a user of ChatGPT?
Yes, I am. I'm ashamed because I don't know why I Google anymore. I'm just in the habit of Googling. I should just do everything on ChatGPT because I don't have to. I don't know. So my face is like, I should be using it more. I'm wasting a lot of time using Google.
Yeah. So, you know, where a lot of this gets interesting is a couple years ago when ChatGPT launched. So for those who don't know, GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. And so what that means is that, so I'll just break down kind of each of the words. So generative means that it creates new content. So it takes existing information. It doesn't just give you the answer like 2 plus 2 equals 4, which you could look up in a table. This has to generate new information that may not necessarily exist yet.
Okay.
Pre-trained is that it was trained off of internet scrape data. So why OpenAI, ChatGPT got in a bunch of trouble is they essentially scraped, you know, the internet and all these sites without their explicit permission to train, you know, that model.
Okay.
And then Transformer is, you know, was really kind of the big innovation here, where it could take natural language processing, so all of your sentence structures, and it could understand a sentence. So it wasn't computation of like 2 plus 2 equals 4. It was, I understand your sentence structure and you are placing your frustration on this object.
Yeah.
And then it could generate then new structures of sentences and take on the form of having a conversation with you. And so, you know, OpenAI and ChatGPT was, I wouldn't say the first, but they were the most popular way to commercialize it. So when they launched a couple of years ago, they had, I think it was like 1 million users in the first 5 days. And within the next few months, they're up to 100 million daily active users. I mean, that's a third of the U.S.
Wow.
That is a pretty insane growth rate.
A third of the U.S. is right now using ChatGPT?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a transformative like technology. It's not a tool. People call it a tool. It's a transformative technology.
Again, I feel like a turd because I was one of the early adopters, like early person used way. You said, you ever tried it? Yeah, I have. But it hasn't become a habit for me. But now I'm wondering, it should have become a habit because all these people are using it. It's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful. I mean, I'd say the most common use case is that it helps solve the blank page problem.
Right.
And, you know, for anybody who has like writer's block or you're like, hey, I want to say this, like I want to write you an email. I'm going to write it out how I would write it. And then I might copy paste it into there and say, hey, you know, improve this for clarity and impact.
Dirt. You paying attention to this, Dirt?
I'm taking notes. Yeah.
Well, you and I have talked about this a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
It's not a phase I'm going through.
No, I know. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So it is super helpful for that. But I think people need to understand that there's a free version of ChatGPT and then there's also a paid version.
Okay.
With the paid version, the data that you upload, they don't use as training data. And so when you look at some of the concerns, you know, around this, I would just encourage people to use, you know, a paid version that has, you know, has your data protected, because you don't want to upload confidential documents or anything like that, because then those might be spilled into the public because they're used for training.
Of course, they would honor you and not use your stuff you're paying. I mean, why would they do both, get money and use your data? Yeah. We could definitely trust them, right?
Yeah.
Am I too cynical?
I would read their user terms. You know, I think that's, and those can change. I mean, you have, you know, like we use Slack. So Slack's like a instant messenger app for those who don't know. And you have private messages that go back and forth with your employees and team members. And then these shared channels, which are meant kind of like for, I don't know, more like water cooler type of conversations or things you want to put out to the team. So Salesforce, who owns them, and Slack, they kind of slid in this whole policy into their terms where all of your data, all of your company data, could be used for training data for their AI. Hmm. And the only way to get out of it was that you had to email this address to opt out. And then it wasn't something automatically. It would take multiple days to make sure that your data is protected. That is pretty bold. Right. Or for companies to do.
Horrible.
Yeah. So, and, you know, any of these companies can do that at a moment's notice. And because data is becoming much more powerful when you can use it to train, you know, a large language model like a ChatGPT and monetize it. And so you see companies kind of getting hip to the scene around, hey, we have a ton of data. Could we use our data to monetize it in an interesting way?
Okay. So before we dig more into AI, I just want to make sure that our definitions are dummy-proofed. Delineate for me the differences between a bot, machine learning, and AI.
Yeah, so machine learning, I'd say, is the biggest circle. All the use cases you've heard around AI over the last 20 years have been mostly machine learning.
As defined by what?
You can label your data. So you could put a piece of data in here and you could give it a bunch of labels around it, and then therefore it could be associated with, it's not like a database where it has just one entry. It could have multiple entries around it, and you can train it so that it's all the data is related. And so if you're doing like a search query, like Google, Google is essentially an AI that's founded on machine learning and neural networks to identify, like when you search a term, mm-hmm. it finds related information and brings that data to the front.
Okay.
So they're not creating net new data. It's just all the data exists already. So that's kind of like AI machine learning.
Okay.
AI, a subset of that, is more around, you can now create agents, which are, you know, bots to some people. You can think of them as digital assistants that you can give it a task and a goal, and it doesn't stop until it performs that task or goal. It can use all the data in your, you know, in your database, but it can also use generative AI to have a conversation with you. So you've got kind of machine learning is the biggest circle. AI is like a smaller circle within that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then generative AI is a smaller circle within that, which creates new content. So I can go in as a user and use a generative AI platform like ChatGPT and say, write me a recipe that uses cauliflower and tacos. And that recipe may not even exist yet, and it's pulling all this data together to create a recipe for me. And sometimes it predicts the next word. And so, you know, when I was doing a podcast with Ovetta Sampson at Google, she described, you know, generative AI as like souped up Mad Libs. So, and it, 'cause it's making predictions on the next word. So it's like Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great
lay.
I knew you would do that.
I would do that.
So, so like most people would say fall. And, you know, so the AI is predicting that that is the correct answer. Now, you can make...
I got you to laugh. I like that. I got your facial muscles to move. So, I'm going to create some creases around your eyelids.
It's good. Extra lotion tonight. No, but you can make a generative AI. It has temperature, so you can make it be, you know, kind of concise and... You know, use the prediction that's like 99.9% of people said this.
Yep.
Or you can make it creative and say, well, don't follow what everybody else is doing. Come up with a new answer like you just did. Mm-hmm. So AI agents, which are kind of like the bots, are extremely powerful because they can use all the data that they have access to, as well as, you know, a large language model that's trained on the internet, and make predictions and solve problems without you being there. And that's probably the most fascinating part about, you know, AI in general, is that you yourself, you could create your own agent or agents to create a team of people around you, and you could collaborate with them at a moment's notice on your phone, and they're generating new content. It's not like you're doing a lookup in a database somewhere.
Yeah.
So you could say, you know, hey, I'm going to create an agent that is trained on my newsletter. It's going to take all past newsletters, understand my tone. I can feed it some new stories I want to talk about, but have it write for me.
So you said you got into it accidentally because you were doing this for Verve. Yep. You're doing that. And
we're going to have to give out like a beret every time people order.
And then what? What happened? What happened then?
Yes. I mean, we created the first version of this, filed for a patent. So we have the patent around the video survey and AI analysis.
Oh,
interesting. It took like, I don't know, 3-something years to get that. And then we launched a platform around it. So I didn't set out to be, you know, like a thought leader at all on AI. I don't consider myself a thought leader. I'm just in love with the problem of trying to take lots of data and information and our human desire to want to collaborate with people and create a solution. And I think, to me, that's the most fascinating part of what AI could do for good.
Yeah.
Is companionship. And I wish I had a better word for it, but it's kind of like collaboration or having a sounding board for you, for your ideas, for, you know, anything you're thinking through, and it doesn't necessarily have a judgment on it necessarily. And I know we've talked a lot about, you know, like male loneliness and I know everything that's going on. And I feel like AI could be a part of a solution to, you know, to help people.
All right. So let's dig into some of the possibilities and boogeymen with AI. Let's do that. So let's start with this one, because this one, I think we've talked about before in the podcast, but a lot of people haven't heard it, haven't looked into it. I went down the rabbit hole when you told me about the AI girlfriend. I don't know if we talked about this.
No, we didn't.
Yeah. So, yes, I did. Have you done it? Have you created
an AI? I do not have an AI girlfriend.
Okay, have you gone down the rabbit hole to do it?
I have not.
Okay, good for you. I don't recommend it.
Okay.
So I did, because I'm curious, and it starts off with just creating your perfect girlfriend, what age you want, hair color, eyes, breast size, rear end, occupation, personality type. And I'm kind of curious as I'm going through this, going, I'm curious what this person looks like. And then, of course, to go to the next level, I couldn't go because I had to put my credit card. I went, no, not doing that.
Yeah.
Not doing that. But you think that kind of process, where then she texts you and sexts you and whatever, you think
definitely
that kind of process could be helpful for male loneliness?
No. Not. That's why I don't like the word companionship.
All right.
Or creating AI girlfriend. So I'm not working in or supportive of kind of that entire path. What I am supportive of is creating agents that can help you accomplish more in your life. So some of those things around like loneliness, like a lot of the AI girlfriend stuff, like immediately goes towards sex and desire and all that, right? So,
right.
But when you talk to people, the thing that they're missing in their life is essentially a friend, someone that they can share what's going on in their life, someone to actually ask them questions of like, hey, how are you doing? What's happening? And we've been fortunate to build a really strong friendship by seeing each other every Thursday. That is not normal for guys. And so I believe that there's a way to create companionship or collaboration or kind of assistance or team around you that are supportive of like ideas that you have, goals that you have, and can help you get there. We're not trying to build the AI girlfriend. We're trying to build a team around you.
But that still would
replace
humans.
You don't need
humans around you to give you counsel.
You definitely need humans around you to give you counsel. I think it's more of the gaps. So if I, I'll leave the office, go home, do dinner, put the girls to sleep, and then jump back on my laptop, and I want to collaborate on something. I want to share an idea or whatever. Everybody's asleep.
Yeah.
Or I get these messages like, hey, let's meet next Tuesday. And you're like, I can't wait. It's constantly going. I wish I could just bounce ideas off of you while you're not there. Because you're just looking at different insights.
Off of me while I'm not.
Maybe. Like, is it weird that you would have your own agent and then I could share what's going on and it shares some, not necessarily advice, it's just more of things to think about. There may be a use case for you, but I think for, our different team members, I want to help me, write something or help me generate images on something or help me turn this idea into an actual plan.
Yeah.
And I think that's where generative AI can help, is that it advances what's possible even though someone's not there. And this might feel weird right now, but I do not believe it to be weird or feel weird in the next couple of years.
So here's my rub with AI is I think as a research, as an intelligence tool, as they help you with your creative work tool, I think it's unparalleled as far as anything that's happened in my lifetime. I think it's just utterly phenomenal, and I can't imagine why somebody wouldn't jump in on it. And I'm going to give some examples that are happening in our organization that you're actually helping us with in a little bit. But my fear, my other side is it just going to make us that less relationally and connected to another person? Can I really expect a machine, a program, ChatGPT, whoever, to fill my relational needs? Because I know it can't, but I know that people are going to want it to fill their relational needs.
Right, yeah. I see it being helpful to fill some of the gaps. And, jury's out on what this is going to look like. But I think if we look at if you take social media, right? So TikTok is just holding a phone and consuming, and you just disappear. You're in a hole. There's no like thought process necessarily going on. It's just like continuous entertainment and consumption. That's what we have today.
Yeah.
AI, in my opinion, creates a different kind of experience where it can make people think about things. So versus me just consuming, I now have an input. That input today is a text box, but it could be a voice. It could be all these different things. And I have to start the question, the prompt. I can now start to create things. And I think that, there hasn't necessarily been – there have been tools to allow you to create things, but not necessarily put in the hands of every person in the world. Yes, you can go to Google and search a term, but that's just finding information. How do I create something new just by the ideas in my head? I think that's what the power of generative AI is, and I do think that it can be a part of a solution. Absolutely, you're going to have bad actors who are doing bad things, deep fakes and all these different stories you hear on the news. Those are real because you have bad people in the world who want to use the best technology to fool people. Those exist. Those will always exist. There's nothing you can really do about it. As much as you try to create policies, it's just bad people.
Right.
But there's so much positive that can come from it, of just helping you advance your ideas. And there's a glimmer in my mind of like the collaborative power of it. You know, like I use it every night when I put, so I have three little girls under the age of 8. I put them to bed. So we kind of rotate nights. So we've got the two youngest one night and then the oldest, she's 8, the next night. I've been creating stories using Verve for bedtime. So the conversation, I sit down on the bed. Hey, girls, what was something that happened that was really exciting today? What was something that made you mad or frustrated? And then let's talk about it. And so they're, you know, telling me about it. I'm like, well, if you had to put this into like an animal, who would this be? And so they would tell me the animal. And then I would create like an AI bedtime story agent on Verve and generate a bedtime story specific to that moment for them and read it to them. And then we create an image of what that story was about. So this past weekend, we went to Kings Island. The 5-year-old was too short to get on all the rides.
That sucks.
Yeah. And she was bummed.
Right.
So that night, we wrote a story about a flamingo that had short legs and couldn't ride roller coasters. And she was so short that she could see underneath the trees and go through these trees into this magical roller coaster that no one had ever found because she was too small. Like,
Bo, I want you for a dad. Oh my gosh, I'm ready to cry over here.
But that's the
power. You wrote that, or you had ChatGPT write it?
I had Verve write it.
Your Verve, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you have
ChatGPT
is trained off the internet.
Okay.
Right? Verve is trained off of real people. It's people's stories. It's, you know, and so, you know, we're an AI platform. We're somewhat competitive, you know, we're in a competitive set with, you know, more of like an open AI enterprise use case. But we're using it inside of companies to help create stories about products, help share insights, help take, you know, an idea you have and create a new product and a story around it. But I started to use it personally because, you know,
wow,
my daughters would share these stories. And I'm like, how do I? So like another one had started getting freckles in her cheek. She's like, I don't like these. And so I was like, okay, well, let's talk about it. And so I started to plug this in. And now we have a bedtime story about Freddie the Freckle, who, you know, wishes all the freckles would go away. They go away overnight and then misses them and then has a dream about how traveled through all these different moments of her life and collected all these freckles as mementums of the things that she's been through. And so then, you know, it was like, well, I want my freckles because they're a sign of the thing I went through or the memory that I had.
Many tattoos.
Yeah, I'm like collecting them through my life.
Wow.
It's just these really interesting
twists.
Yeah. They're like, I'm a creative person, but I would never come up with that. And so, wow. But it's just a really helpful starting point. And now we have that as a story and an image. And so I'm like, well, what a cool way to have all these stories. And at the end of the year, create a little book about it, of all these things that they've been through, but it's like about them, but like not about them. Yeah, it's just an interesting thing as a dad of how do I use AI to connect with my kids better.
If you've never been to Man Camp and you're a man, what are you waiting for? Head on over to mancamp.us, claim your spot today. Registrations close on September 1st, so don't wait. Chop, chop. All the details you need can be found over at mancamp.us. Mancamp 2024 is happening September 27th to 29th in Southwest Ohio. And just for the listeners of The Aggressive Life, just for you, nobody else in the whole world gets this. Nobody but you. You can use the promo code PODCAST15 to get 15% off tickets right now. 15% off right now. That's PODCAST15 to claim your spot at Man Camp for the cheapest price available. I hope to see you out there this fall. But for now, let's get on with the show. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should be at least simple. That's why for the last 2 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions, at home, on a hunting trip, camping off my motorcycle, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to get moving. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. I like to have it in the morning. I have a 12 ounce of water, so right off the bat, I'm helping my hydration every single morning. This is the one product, if I had to recommend one, I'd recommend this one to elevate your health. It's AG1, and that's why I partnered with them for 2 years. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/aggressivelife. That's drinkag1.com/aggressivelife. Get yourself some. I just got a new grill slash smoker, and out of all the meat I'm cooking up, there's something that hits the spot like no other. A real American cheeseburger. And when I gotta buy burger, man, I want Flying K Ranch. Located in Findlay, Ohio, Flying K Ranch raises their beef the natural way. No hormones or antibiotics. Just happy cows eating grass all day. Flying K is a family business that ships all over America and partners with state and national certification boards to make sure cattle and customers are happy. Make your meals count this summer with some burgers and steaks from Flying K Ranch. Learn more and place your orders at flyingkranchangus.com. That's flyingkranchangus.com. Time to eat and time to get back to the show. So you go to Vervais. And you type in too short for roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah, I can pull it up.
Young girl, and it gives you a story.
Yeah.
Wow. And parents could do this.
Yeah.
Wow. Dude, that's a change gamer.
Yeah.
I used to make up stories all the time for my kids, but they were the same ones over and over again.
Right. Yeah.
It was about them being a hero and stuff like that. But to have an asset like that, that's cool.
Yeah, here's the picture of the flamingo.
Oh my gosh!
With like short legs, you know, standing in front of the magical roller coaster.
Wow!
That you took.
That's awesome.
And so every night we do it. It generates the story for me around it.
Yeah, I'm looking at a long scroll on your screen. that's awesome, man.
Yeah,
that's great. All right, well, let's get into that for a moment. Look at that picture. If there was starving artists before, they're not starving. They're emaciated and dead. That's the way it looks like to me. Like the art that this generates, how is an illustrator ever hired again? How is somebody who, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I've looked at some of the stuff, and we're talking with our video department. One of the things I did was I went to all of our departments. I said, I want to see you research and report back to me. What are the possibilities of AI and how it changed your department and changed your job? How could we use it? How could we? Not saying we are.
Yeah.
How is that going to happen? One of the ones for me is when I look at what is the program you create your own videos? Like I saw a video.
Pika or Sora.
Well, this one was...
Oh, was it that I sent you maybe? It was like Playground or a Midjourney.
It was the one, I think you sent it to me. It was the one with the gold rush in Northern California.
Yeah.
In the late.
Yeah.
What program was that?
Playground. Or actually, I'm sorry. It was Midjourney. That's...
All right. So you plug in late 1800s, gold rush, Northern California, drone shot, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, mm-hmm. whatever. And I looked at this and I thought, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know that we'll ever do B-roll again. I don't know that we'll ever send a crew to Israel.
Yeah.
To it's computer generated and it's exactly like you were there.
Right.
The artist world, that's where it gets scary for me. I don't know that there's many people holding cameras across our country. I'm not talking about crossers. I don't know there's many people using Adobe, using Illustrator. That seems to be one obvious one for me. Those artsy jobs, a huge percentage of them are gone. Agree or disagree?
I think some of them will change, yeah. But I think you're also creating the appetite in a whole other subsection of people who now have the ability to create things and value the things that are created. So,
right.
You know, when you would express an idea, you might go to Pinterest or try to find examples of things that you liked, but you could never put your finger on it. It looks like this. And I think now there's a tool that you could describe it, or you could upload your inspiration images and generate it. And it gets you closer to what you think it should be. I think it's bringing out creativity in every person. Because I'm just so tired of hearing people say, I'm not creative.
Right.
And what they're saying is, like, I'm not an artist. And, you know, I think that's BS.
Yeah.
I think there are now tools where you can create different things. You could do it as text or visuals or videos. It's really just what you want to express as your idea. Sometimes it's emotion.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what an amazing way to be able to put a tool in every person's hands to express emotion or ideas in a completely different way that may otherwise just stay in their head.
So the little short-legged flamingo you just showed me, okay, that's really beautiful, cool. That would work for me as a parent.
Yeah.
But if it was a professional application, that wouldn't work for me. I want to make some adaptations.
Yeah.
So are you saying that instead of the artsy person being really into using their own pencils on paper, they're going to have to get really into using these AI programs and then using their creativeness
on top of it?
On top of it.
Yeah.
And if you say, well, it's not the that's not the pencil and paper that I really want. Okay. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
When the harp was all there was, you either figured out how to go from the harp to the piano to the guitar, or you didn't.
Yeah. I mean, tools changed. So, I mean, you had a physical pencil, it became a digital pencil.
Yes.
And a Wacom tablet. Then it became, hey, I wish I could just disappear the background. Really, you know, do I need to spend an entire day creating this little lasso mask around it? We're just helping people go faster to do the things that they want, because then you would, you know, if it took you a whole day to do that, you'd probably give up and say, well, it's not worth it. Now it's all in your imagination. So it's, you're adding layers to it. So if you can create a pencil sketch, upload it, and turn it into the initial sketch of what it is. So, like, a lot of the work that we're doing is, you know, for a lot of business teams, is they may not necessarily know how to articulate, like, the design of a shoe, right? Oh, I just work on the marketing team or the insights team. Great. But how do you take an insight and actually turn it into a shoe design?
Yeah.
We are giving people the power to do that in seconds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just the emotion on their face of, like, I've never been able to do this in my job. It just has always come across as a PowerPoint. This shoe should have these features, and here's what consumers are going to talk about it. But I'm not a designer. I'm not an artist. I have to get a shoe designer involved. And today you don't. I mean, you do at a certain point. But it shouldn't stop you from creating.
Let's talk about how this would affect all of our individual organizations, because we've got virtually every sector of the economy or social sector structure in our audience today. Why don't you talk about what I've hired you to do, what you're doing for me, and then I'm going to give you peppery with questions and say, if you're a mechanic, if you're an accountant, if you're how might AI impact? So talk about what you're doing with me.
Yeah. So what we did is
Is it done?
Yes. We just need to do a demo with you.
Okay. Awesome. Great.
So we have taken a year's worth of series. Both, you know, all the video transcripts, your books, pods, all different kinds of things, not only for you, but also multiple people here, and created essentially a Crossroads AI. And so what it allows you to do is to generate new content using all the material. It's all grounded. You'll hear this term a lot, but it's grounded in the truth of everything that you've said over the last 5 years. So you could generate a new talk. You know, hey, create a script for me for a 15-minute talk around, you know, with this audience, and here's what I want to talk about, and maybe base it off of this, you know, book in the Bible. It can generate that for you in seconds. and it's doing it in your tone. And just like anything, like I know, especially for you, it, when given a script, you treat it as an outline.
Well, you saw here with me.
Yeah, but it's like you're connecting with the audience, with the people, and you know this is a helpful place to start. And like kind of remind you of things that you might have said before, and like, oh yeah, this is where I'm going to go deep, you know, based off what I'm feeling from this group. So it's just a really helpful place to start. But it's setting the tone for the creation of multiple agents that could be helpful for, you know, internal team members to support their work. You know, but ultimately it could be something that people interact with, to help them through different situations. So, you know, could there be an agent that helps, you know, single dads, you know, through different things? And yes, there are groups to do that.
What do you mean an agent who helps single
dads? So like an AI agent, like I don't want to call it a bot because it's a little bit more than that, but it can be a conversational agent on your phone that has the knowledge of like a single dad and what it's like to raise kids and some of the stories around that, so that you could have someone to kind of chat with.
Okay, got it.
So does it replace or take the place of a small group or a text string with your other dads? No, it doesn't have to, but it just could fill in the gaps and give you a different.
It will for a lot of people because we take the easy way out. It will, but it won't. It can't. There still is a sacredness to a human being as opposed to a sacredness of a computer program.
Correct.
That happens to be artificially intelligent, but it's still doesn't possess the Holy Spirit. It isn't created in the image of God.
Correct.
You know.
Yeah, and this is the kind of the conversation you and I had or started to have over breakfast a few months ago. So as a Christian founder and CEO of an AI company, what are the principles you have to operate at that is fundamentally different than, you know, a Sam Altman at OpenAI? You know, those are interesting and meaningful principles that, you know, I'm still trying to understand and shape of this kind of new space, because there are certain people who are pursuing AI girlfriends and are pursuing the personification of AI. And I'm not necessarily trying to do that. So I am trying to open up, you know, collaboration and, you know, companionship in a different way, but more like an assistant that can help you through things. Mm-hmm. I think for adoption, like our behaviors are that we want it to be conversational as opposed to just give me the answer. I think we've been trained on Google to like put a search term in and give me the answer, which doesn't make us necessarily think, but this has an opportunity to be a sounding board for something new you want to create.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of opportunities around that path, but I think it's making choices in a very meaningful way of what is in bounds and what's out of bounds. And sometimes it's hard to know what those are until you do it.
Yeah.
Until you see it.
So that's one of the things that we're doing and exploring, because I want to make moves. I want to make moves to push instead of just being fearful of what could happen.
Yeah.
I read a very compelling article in a Christian magazine years and years and years and years ago, long before there was AI, but the principle applies. It was in, I believe it was Christianity Today, conservative, you know, Christian magazine, and for many years the flagship of journalism for Christians in America. I don't know if it is anymore, but long time ago. And the writer was saying, since humans are created in the image of God, we have a divine mandate to create. And instead of trying to be the voice in culture that tamps everything down and keeps things from going forward, whether it's stem cell research or AI or whatever it is, we should be on the forefront of exploring those things instead of only being the people who say, no, you can't do it. No, you can't do it. And there are certain things that we can't do, right? There are certain things you just can't do. But our initial reflex should be yes, because we're the creators. Humans are creators. And if we're connected with God, believers should be leading the creative front because we understand our mandate more than atheists who are only doing it for money. We're doing it. Some more money would be great, but we're doing it because we understand theologically it's my destiny. It's my calling.
I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason to get started in this was, I mean, you know, I'm just a creative person, and I think I think everybody is creative, but they're just not necessarily given opportunities to do that. Our mission as a company is to turn every person in the world into a creator, and not a creator that you might think of like a content creator, an influencer, but truly someone that can, that has ideas. You have a lived experience, you have insight, and now at your fingertips, can we give you tools to turn that into something?
Yeah.
And I think that is like, that's an amazing, like it's me excited every day to go build this feature.
So let's do some quick one-offs of how this might help somebody in this industry. Okay. I'll just give it to you. We'll call this our lightning round.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Yeah.
Wealth management and financial planning.
I would build multiple AI agents that can take on the persona of different types of investors. And how might you deliver messages and recommendations to each of those in a different way?
All right. Owns a body shop.
That's a good one.
That's a car. I intentionally went the other way. I figured the first one you'd have no problem with something there, but this one, like, maybe there are things that are not AI oriented. What do you think?
I think there's something interesting around cars. Cars take on a personality. Some people give them names. It'd be interesting to have a conversation with your car about what's wrong. You know, all the different kinds of things. It has a dashboard and signals within it. But it'd be an interesting thing if it could take on the personality of an AI agent that you could talk to when you get in the car. And that could that connect to your mechanic shop?
Okay. I hear you that I stumped you. That's right here. That's good. Okay. Let's go to the next one. I think you always gave one. I was going to say stay-at-home parent. I think you gave a great one already. Is there others beyond creating stories?
Yeah, I mean, you can create all different kinds of things. We do you can create a chart for like brushing your teeth just with a simple prompt. So here are the kids' names, create like a weekly chart, and it could design it for you and click print.
Okay.
We've done it from like birthday cards and invites to all different kinds of things.
Regional sales manager.
I think plugging in all of the interviews that you've had with all your customers and prospects, plugging all those transcripts, notes, ideas into an AI where then it could help you generate messaging, insights, you know, from these, and also help you build different customer segments.
Yeah, this has all been good. It's great stuff. Very helpful. What should someone like me be asking you about AI that I'm not asking you?
I mean, we've talked through kind of some of the problems with it. I mean, it's really just people generally. I think it's so, as I tend to speak at a bunch of different conferences and things like that, I think one of the things that rings true is that it's not necessarily how I feel about it. It's about you forming your own opinion about it. And that only comes from people getting in and starting to use it. You have to get informed and educated about this, because this is a tidal wave that is going to come over every device in your life. So if you've seen the recent Apple announcements with, you know, ChatGPT 4.0 coming to Siri on your phone, you know, we're going into a different territory.
ChatGPT 0.04 would be better than Siri. Siri sucks. Always has.
Yeah. So that's why they made the change.
Yeah, okay.
Well, because it was built on
– So Siri's going to be based on ChatGPT then?
It's going to use ChatGPT 4.0 as a reasoning engine.
Dang.
So, yeah. So you're going to have all these features. They're calling it Apple Intelligence, AI for short. Get it? They're pushing all these things down to your phone. Now, you know, some of these are super helpful to like help you organize your photos and things like that.
Interesting.
Some of these are a little, they haven't made these specific announcements yet, but you know, they have features like, you know, Microsoft, where it's recording your screen and it's supposed to help you make recall on the things that you're doing. Hmm. I don't know how I feel about that. Hmm. So, you know, same thing with like recording your phone calls. And learning different things about what people are talking about. I don't like that. So I think us as consumers have to get very informed and educated about what AI is and then what are we okay with? Because, you know, so it's, and I, you know, we're going to see some pushback on these from the, I hope, from the consumer world of what we're comfortable with and what we're not. But I think the, I wouldn't say necessarily it's a cautionary tale, but like we've seen how social media and this experience of just being kind of glued to a screen and fed a bunch of things and what that does to our, to the people around us. As we go into this next age, which is much more generative, so we're not just consuming, we're generating things. There's going to be a new set of behaviors and also things that we're comfortable with and not comfortable with. I would encourage people just to get educated on this space because it's coming very, very fast and it will impact almost every device you have in your life.
So how would someone get educated other than listening to this podcast again?
Yeah, I mean, we have our own podcast called AI Powered by People. We launch every week. So we talk to thought leaders you know, in this space and also like CPG retail leaders about how they're creating using AI. So you can go there. Also, you know, download our app or, you know, just try out like ChatGPT and see, you know, see what it can do. So you just want to be aware of what these things are and don't let it seem like it's this, you know, super far out technology that if people are putting a chip in your brain, like that's really far out. It's not. Like these are things that are happening today. And with Apple's announcement, I mean, they're pushing it out to millions and millions of phones.
Yeah.
So whether you like it or not, it's coming to your device.
I'm torn on the compromises to privacy. I'm torn on that. Yesterday, I was with one of our teams and I was telling him about a video that I got some inspiration from. And I said, you guys all got this. I sent this to you. They're like, no, we didn't. Yeah, I did. And I spent a good bit of time that morning figuring out, wait, did I send that video? Where did I find that video? And then, of course, I was with Dirt, and Dirt said, oh, it's the one I share with you at our prayer time the other day. I was like, oh, gosh, that was. But I had, I don't know how much wasted mental energy and time trying to figure that out, where if someone's recording all my keystrokes or all everything on the some AI.
Right.
Could have been solved in 5 seconds. So that one, I go, is it helpful. Worth me sacrificing my privacy? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for certain things, yeah, it's super helpful. It's just a matter of what you're comfortable with.
Well, and that's another thing, what I'm comfortable with. What I'm comfortable with might not be the same as what would hurt me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the true... what do you think is likely dangerous about this? Not could be, not let's not have a planning brainstorm session on. But what could go wrong with this? What do you think is a real possibility this will go wrong?
Yeah. So take the TikTok algorithm and it just existing in TikTok and put it across every other channel and medium in your life.
No, so I'm not understanding.
So if TikTok has kind of perfected this algorithm to keep you addicted to kind of the single stream of content,
yes.
Imagine that same algorithm is on your computer, on your TV, on your this audio in your house, in your car. It's just constantly learning and like taking everybody and putting them into a single stream of thought.
And that means we're all therefore going to be less informed because we're not going to be pushed on things, or that means society is going to be that much further polarized because we're all going to be on our own individual streams, or that means
So I mean, it could be ultra personalization for just you on your device. It's just trying to make sure that the things that we want to share with big tech companies are the things that we want to share, and they help improve our life or in some form or facet. When you're making a decision to go onto a platform and consuming content, like that feels right. But recording your computer screen, I don't know if you want that. If you want that all the time, so if someone steals your laptop, all the data there is like essentially the 3 years. Not just files, it's the 3 years of like looking at anything. So if you open an email from a team member around like a sensitive subject, that's now on there.
Okay.
There right. So it's
there you go.
It's just, I think it's going to change how, change things that we might want to share with people. And I don't want it to, I don't want it to be a barrier of, you know, not wanting to say things out loud, or put other people who didn't mean, they didn't agree to that, you know, who sent you an email.
Yeah, right.
So I think, you know, it just calls into question just consent and just that we, again, just being, you know, this, I'm not a doomsday robot at all. Like, I love what this is and what we can do. I just want people to be educated a little bit about some of the trade-offs that we're making on a personal and individual level of the devices that we're using and those kinds of things. And what are we comfortable with and what are we not comfortable with? Mm. And it's just it'll be a constant evolution of these topics.
Yeah, gosh, that's good. Could do a whole nother podcast just on that, but we're about done with our time. Bo, if someone wants to follow up with you, see your stuff, be more inspired by you, where do they go?
Yeah, so you can go to, you can email me direct at chad@verve.com or check out our website or a podcast. And appreciate you having me on. And this is like just, I mean, it's a really interesting topic. And I think it's going to shape the world over the next few years. So excited to be doing this with you.
Well, I'm glad you are. You've been very, very helpful to me. And shoot, Dirt and I might put our heads together and I might have you back in here in about 2 days to do another to part two. But this is good. You're such a great friend. I just respect you so much. You're just a good man. And I just love that you're pushing the rock up the hill and it's about to gain momentum on the downside. You've been slogging away for a while here, and I love that you're getting traction. It's, well,
thank
it's
you.
Inspiring.
I appreciate it. Very You've cool. been there every step of the way, so thank you.
Hey, brother. All right, hey, I don't know what this means for you. Does it mean you're supposed to be less freaked about creativity? Does it mean you're supposed to be less freaked about AI? Does it mean you're supposed to be more freaked about AI? I don't know. I just know the world is changing. And you can be passive and just let it sweep you away and just complain about it and be cynical, or you can figure out, what are my convictions on this? What do I want to do? What am I going to do in my sphere of influence? Take control of your life. It's your life. It's the life God gave you. Be aggressive with it. We'll see you next time on The Aggressive Life. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and live events over at briantome.com. My new books, a repackaged edition of The 5 Marks of a Man, and a brand new 5 Marks of a Man tactical guide are open right now on Amazon. If you haven't yet, leave this podcast a rating and review. It really helps get the show in front of new listeners. And if you want to connect, find me on Instagram at briantome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.